Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And Katie O, did you know that I own several of Seattle's finest restaurants?
I did know that. Yeah.
Maybe from when you were working in our company and you decided that we weren't good enough for you, that you got to eat in some of those restaurants.
Yeah, well, you know, still though, to this day, tender spot in my heart, all your restaurants. I visit them quite frequently. My little sister works at Tanaka-san. I got to go support her.
Do you still have your employee card and get your discount?
No, but I know your code. I know your house account number,
there
Tom.
No
worries.
I do have several restaurants, Palace Kitchen amongst them. Etta's down in the Pike Place Market, which I ate at last night.
Was it delicious?
Oh, it was really good. Andrew Rivera is the chef down there, and he is awesome. So, but it's fun to go down. It was cooking hot last night, and to see everyone out on the patio, and then everyone who didn't want to sit on the patio because they wanted some AC. They're sick and tired of this heat around here, and luckily there's some cooler weather in the forecast.
Fabulous.
Just drove in from the farm. It was 108 degrees. Ooh. 108.
Oh, wow. Brisk. Wow. So cold. Yeah. Yes. So chilly that drive over.
Yes, indeed.
I hope these are not centigrades because you'd be melted.
We have a large show for you today. We're going to use a salmon in every course of a dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
Salmon chanted evening.
What a beautiful voice you
have
this
morning. You may meet a fishy. We're covering food in the news, including Pike Place, table souvenirs, and more. Dahlia pastry chef Brittany Bartleben is going to join us for the Baker's Corner in our second hour. Yes, we are here for 2 hours, and you must stay. Everyone in the audience is going to stay. And, of course, we're going to go toe-to-toe on food trivia at the end of the show. So we have lots to go on. And we're going to jump into ordinary to extraordinary.
That's right. This is where you take some ordinary dishes or ingredients, and you, with all your know-how, make them extraordinary. So the first one is National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. You guys eating ice cream sandwiches in all this warm weather we've been having?
I don't know if I had one this summer yet. I think I've had one.
I just had one at, I played in the golf tournament last week at Seattle Golf Club, and they had all sorts of ice cream sandwiches.
What, like, what kind? More than just the whatever kind of soft Oreo cake and vanilla? You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
That's the OG.
KDO. This was the Seattle Golf Club.
Well, I don't mean to offend.
You think they only had one brand or what?
Okay, so then tell us.
The only thing I couldn't do at the tournament last week, they have a black tie affair to end the week.
And you don't have a black tie suit?
Not only, I don't even have a suit. I don't even have a tie. So
you what?
I declined to go to the black tie event, and my host, the guy who invited me to the event, was not very happy with
it. A handsome man like you does not have a single suit.
Not one.
Wow.
Sorry.
Okay.
Right. Sorry. I went to Catholic school 1 through 12, and so I had to wear a suit and tie every
so
day.
So you burn all that out.
I don't do that anymore.
Quota reach.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Ice cream sandwich.
Ice cream sandwich. I think that really it's about the cookie.
Yep.
And something that holds up well, because sometimes on the ice cream sandwiches, I know people love that kind of soggy brownie-ish cookie that you find on the classic ice cream sandwich, but I like a cookie that doesn't squish the ice cream out of the center.
Mm-hmm.
So something more like a shortbread rather than, say, a chocolate chip cookie or a crispy cookie.
You like a crispy cookie with your ice cream.
No. Actually, I like something that's crispy, but it still has crumb, like a shortbread.
Okay.
Right.
Like a pecan shortbread with raspberry chirpon.
Like it will just crumble as soon as your little incisors stick.
Yeah, so then the ice cream doesn't squeeze out the center. Because I don't want to eat it completely hard, rock frozen, because it breaks your teeth and you don't taste anything because you have to let it temper a bit for it to
have some
taste.
I'm with you, Tom, 100% on this one.
So a pecan shortbread, a little raspberry chiffon sherbet. Sherbet. I almost couldn't.
Sherbet.
Yeah.
Wow.
Let's move on. I think we're done here.
We did it.
Yeah.
We really did it that time. Okay. How about another sweet treat on the third, chocolate chip cookies?
It's all about the chocolate because the cookie's already made.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to have some good bittersweet chocolate, 70% bittersweet chocolate, and that's what makes the cookie, I think.
But there's plenty of sugar in the cookie batter.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You don't need sugar in the chocolate. You need good chocolate.
Two hotly debated topics with the chocolate chip cookie.
And warm.
One. Texture. Texture. Do you like a crunchy chocolate chip cookie?
Yes, I like them baked.
Yeah. You like them baked.
I don't like this raw nonsense.
I don't mind chewy
if it's cooked, like a molasses cookie. But I don't like raw cookie dough in my cookie. If I want that, I'll have it in my ice cream.
Okay, so there. second thing, nuts, no nuts.
No nuts.
No nuts.
No nuts.
They drive me nuts.
Get your nuts
out
of my cookie.
It's a chocolate chip cookie.
All right.
My mother would totally disagree, though.
But a touch of whipped cream.
My mother loves walnuts.
I've never heard anybody.
Yeah.
How about watermelon? We've got National Watermelon coming up on the 3rd, and watermelon is everywhere. I took a nice little rafting trip. It was such a refreshing snack.
Watermelon.
As we were getting baked in the sun.
Watermelon, a little bit of sea salt, some anise sop, put the whole thing, you know, cut them in pie-shaped kind of slices, and then put in a sandwich bag, shake the whole thing up, and take it with you. Wherever you're going, it's going to be
stick it in your cooler.
Fantastic.
So you're saying salt to watermelon first. I would be surprised at that.
A little bit. Just a little bit of salt, and it will
help.
Why
not just bring a little thing of salt and put it on right before you eat it?
Because I want it to just work with the anise ice up even more. And so when you eat the watermelon,
it's going to be soup when you get there.
No. Well, it's going to have a little juice in the bag, yes.
And a summer gazpacho.
But not a lot. Not a lot.
Yeah, it's watermelon gazpacho at
Who
that point.
Who doesn't like a nice little watermelon?
I just tried to count the amount of watermelons at the farm that are just about ready to be picked, and there's over 250 watermelons.
What? What are you going to do with all those watermelons?
I don't know. I think we've discussed this already, that you don't realize we have restaurants, and so we have 15 restaurants that might enjoy a watermelon.
200 divided by 15. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get rid of those.
Yeah,
you're right.
Thank you.
That's easy.
We can get rid of them all just at Cantina Lena and the watermelon margaritas.
Those are so good. Yeah. I've been thinking about those in this heat. They are quite delicious. Here's a really random national food holiday, Raspberry Cream Pie Day. I'm not even sure what that is. I've never
heard of raspberry. Well, let me tell you, it's like a crust, and then there's like
a
raspberry pastry cream or
today.
Custard,
really,
and then some whipped cream on
right
top.
Now.
And typically on a raspberry pie, they'll put like a little raspberry decor right on top all the way around for each piece. Now, do you know what it is?
So how are you going to make it extraordinary, Smarty Pants?
Well, Mr. Chef in the Chapeau already used my favorite herb for fruit, which is
anise ice up. I think a little mint or something, maybe even tarragon would work.
Or you pick up the pie and you look at Katie O in the eyes and you go, swat. That would make it extraordinary.
That would make it extraordinary. That would make my hair smell terrible for the rest of the day. But
raspberry cream.
Raspberry cream. You smell like vanilla and raspberry.
It like a
Vegas store
or something
until I hit
like
the
that.
Sun.
Yeah. All right. It's time for the art of a good breakfast. One of my favorite meals of the day. I probably go out for breakfast as much as any meal, so I'm looking forward to hearing your guys' thoughts on that on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Okay, it's the Seattle Kitchen Show. It's time for breakfast. I know you might be listening late in the evening or in your garden or on your tractor or on your bicycle or walking around Green Lake.
I hope not on your bicycle. You need to pay attention to the road if you're on a foot pedaling bicycle.
I think I told you last week, I'm still surprised by it, but we have listeners all over, but somebody approached me at the farmer's market in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And they listen to our show every week. Isn't that cool?
It is cool.
If I could remember his name, if you want to, sir, if you're listening right now, if you want to tell me your name, I'll put your name on the air.
Wow.
But you have to go to Facebook and
you
Facebook
have to us. Tell us who you are, though.
I know exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't remember. The New York Times recently put out an article about what makes for a good Australian breakfast, which got me thinking, what makes for a good breakfast in general? So I thought we'd talk here with you two, because I know you're a breakfast hound.
I love breakfast.
Yes. So what is your go-to breakfast and why? What does it make you feel like when you finish? Because sometimes, like if you eat a big Irish breakfast or a big English breakfast.
Right. You're out.
You're done.
You want to go back to bed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what is your breakfast and what do you want to feel like when you're done with breakfast? Do you want to be sated? Do you want to be full and go take a nap? Do you want to just be ready for the day? Because I want to be ready for the day.
Right. Weekdays, ready for the day. I mean, there's too much to do to be tired after having that first meal. Weekends, all bets are off. It's anything. It could be anything.
This
it's
is when the double eggs Benedict comes in.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like weekends, especially at my age, I don't have kids. I know that when you have kids, you know, you're on a stricter schedule. Mm-hmm. I do not have that, so I'm really enjoying the luxury of getting up, having a full pot of coffee, and then I start getting hungry because I have nothing in my stomach. I've had all that coffee, and I begin to think about what sounds really, really delicious. And occasionally, it's like, you know what? I want just very classic diner breakfast. which could be anything.
Now, we're on the weekend, right?
We're on the weekends, mm-hmm. yeah. So it could be something like that. It could be a delicious Vietnamese breakfast of pho. I mean, it really has that, the full
depth
and range.
That's more of a weekday breakfast for me, the beef noodle soup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep.
That just jump-starts my day.
Yeah.
There's almost no time where that doesn't work, honestly. Mm. Even on warm days, I know it's counterintuitive, but like this morning, it's cool. It'll warm up in the afternoon, and a bowl of pho sounds delicious. Mm-hmm.
When it's done well, it tastes so delicious, and it doesn't matter what temperature is outside, mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then your weekend breakfast, without it being ethnic, just a great American breakfast.
Yeah.
You said diner, but what is that?
Diner to me means that you get there and they have all the egg specials. You've got, the two egg breakfast.
No, but what do you? I know what they have. I know I have a diner. I know what they serve.
Okay, fair enough.
But what do you have?
Lately, I've been going to the Hudson and I really love their huevos rancheros. Mm-hmm. It's really good. A really like crispy tortilla, black beans, perfectly cooked egg. Mm-hmm. And they really just kill it on the hash brown game. It's a shredded hash brown, so it's just a lot of food.
Uh-huh.
You can't really do much after that meal,
right.
But it's delicious. And then their chicken fried steak there is really, really quite good.
Now, that's one of my favorites.
I know.
Now, tell me one thing, please.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the Hudson, which is off the beaten track. It's over there on 99, way down there.
Right. You got to want it.
And I get it, but do you have to stand in line?
No.
Because I can't stand on weekends.
I've never stood in line for more than
I love that.
A couple of, 2 minutes. They're clearing the bar top off, and then I go sit down. They make a great Bloody Mary, which I think is also a real treat on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And you get your cup of coffee. You've got, juice, Bloody Mary, coffee, big plate of breakfast. I mean, you're living a good life if you're having that kind of
so
weekend.
You like alcohol with your weekend breakfast?
Yeah.
I don't do that.
You don't do that? No. You wait. You like to wait
until
5 o'clock.
I'm a 5 o'clock guy. 5 o'clock, and then after that, all bets are off.
No, I feel like it's a real weekend when you're like, give me that mimosa. Give me that Bloody Mary.
I'd be dead asleep after
that. Yeah, so. Well.
Nothing else would get done. Chef Terry.
I'm going to go with the hash brown, two sunny side up. Very soft. Mm. I definitely like my eggs way, way undercooked. I like the white to still be jiggly. And
somebody got
grossed up.
Someone did not approve.
It's kind of like me. I'm white and jiggly.
Can I get my eggs Tom Douglas style?
I got my eggs looking like Tom Douglas.
She didn't make that noise. Thank God. About you. Anyway, I'm a big fan of the hash brown and the eggs and a nice toast. I like
good you like a classic.
A good piece of bread that's not... I don't want white bread. I don't want none of this mushy bread. I want a good piece of sourdough. Sourdough bread, that's nicely grilled. I want it to be nicely dark grilled. And then...
Jam or no jam?
Jam.
Jam.
Yeah, but good jam.
Jam.
No waste of jam. I don't... If it's, in a little pot on the table, I'm not very... I don't need to eat that.
You don't
like
that freezer jam necessarily.
But I like good jam. I love my apricot jam at home from Bon Maman with extra fruit in it. You get the big, chunks of apricot in it. Oh, man. That job does never, ever last very long.
Hmm. Oh, I forgot to mention the one thing that I love when I go out to breakfast at a diner. A pancake to share for the table.
Yeah.
Because too many pancakes is too much. But, I like a little bite.
I mean, there's tons of good stuff for breakfast. I like a good waffle. If you can make a good waffle with some blueberry and a little whipped cream after my eggs, you kind of like a dessert. I like that too.
Yeah.
So, Chef, let's go back to you for 1 second.
Yeah.
So you've said all this. Do you have to go to your own restaurant to get this the way you want it, or is there a place that you like to go for breakfast?
Usually home.
That can cook it? Oh, yes, exactly. I'm so over this. He's the best cook in the whole century.
No, but it's just I cook what I want.
It is kind of funny, though, in terms of breakfast.
Isn't that what it's all about? If you can cook.
No, I'm just teasing, but isn't there any place that can cook well enough for you?
Of
Not
course.
Not one
I'm
place
sure,
in
I'm
town?
Sure. I mean,
what
I've
about
been,
your own? You serve breakfast.
I've been with you to the Hudson. That was delicious. We had a great little breakfast. That was fantastic.
I just wanted to make sure that you could get your breakfast somewhere where you didn't have to cook.
But I'm like you, Tom. I will not wait outside 45 minutes for a table for brunch on Sunday with a bad cup of coffee in the rain.
No,
I'm not that guy. I just can't do that.
Sometimes I like to think of the wait as an opportunity. So let's say you're in West Seattle. You want to go to Ma Ono for brunch because you want to eat that fried chicken or whatever.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be a wait. But when's the last time you've been to West Seattle? You walk that farmer's market if it happens to be Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the Beer Junction. You visit some other shops. It's the same with Ballard. It's a busy street on the weekends. But there are things to do. So support the local economy.
Explore
a way.
Explore a new neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
I can see that.
Okay, Tom.
I know we only have 2 minutes left, and I eat a lot of breakfast.
I know.
I end up for kind of, I'm hesitant to say trashy because people don't quite understand what I mean by that.
I know.
I always mean when I say trashy, it's trashy good.
Yeah, it's
right?
Good.
So
it's a good thing.
That's like my coconut fried prawns or something like that. Yeah, trashy good, right? So for my kind of trashy breakfast where I just want a big patty sausage and hash brown, I go to Vera's in Ballard.
Great choice.
Nick is a cool guy. He's owned it forever, and I've been going there since Loretta was born at Ballard. We left the hospital with her in our little thing, and we went to have breakfast.
I think I've had breakfast with Loretta there myself. Yeah,
in her little car thing.
On
the table. And then for a nice breakfast, I'm not going to promote my own joints because I love them. And they
Lola.
But for an interesting breakfast, I would say, I think is it the Fat Hen?
Fat Hen, over on
the 70th in Ballard?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Love that little place.
It's so cute, too.
It could have a line, though.
Yeah.
So I drive by, kind of scope it out, see if there's a line, and then I...
And then you go to Vera's.
then I go to Vera's. But no, generally, there's a line there. But I love that little place because they're trying some new things.
Right.
And the last one I had there, I think I even talked about it on the show, was like a cinnamon toast with lardo on top.
Oof.
For breakfast.
Okay.
Holy smokes.
Okay, we see you. We see you, Fat Hen.
Yes. Oh, my God. My eyes bugged out of my head. It was so good. But I like being challenged, but typically people don't like to be challenged at breakfast. They like to have what they want.
Yeah.
Right? They
you have an idea.
When they walk in the door.
That's right.
Yeah. So, unlike dinner, you might get people, other than steak
but
and potato.
A good breakfast is really delicious. It's a great way to start the day. It doesn't matter what it is. But
I could talk about breakfast for another 30 minutes. I love it
so much. But I will say, outside of my trashy breakfast, like at Vera's, I go to Pho mostly.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Right now, fresh fruit and yogurt is a good idea, actually.
When my daughter was going to SAS up on the hill, you just drop her at school, drive right down 12th, you end up right at Pho Bach, and boom, start your day. Food in the news. When we come back, our friend Jonathan Gold has passed. I'm going to miss his writing terribly on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show.
I'm Terry Retro. I'm Terry Retro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Katie O.
We're here every week. Both Saturday and Sunday, and sometimes twice on Sunday. So, or you can pick us up on your podcast, your favorite place.
Huh? I was going to say, really, whenever you want us, as long as you have a way to listen to podcasts.
Any there
you
go. Way you
and
want.
You notice we're just like talk normal, and then Katie goes in like, and whenever you want us.
This is my voice. What do you want from me?
Well, you use your voice in a sultry way that is unforgiving.
Tom.
It's a sin. It's a crime.
Yeah, it's
this voice.
It's unforgiving. Tom, it makes you think things that you shouldn't think.
Wow.
Tom, this is the reason.
You can have us whenever you want us.
Tom, it's the reason we're still on the air.
Okay, all right.
Well, you're welcome, everybody.
All right. The home shows are coming up, Chef. Do you want to talk about those? Pearl Jam is
We have a whole dedicated two shows on the 8th and on the 10th of August. And Pearl Jam's going to do a big, giant concert, and it's booked up for like days. Uh-huh. I can't even get tickets, and I'm donating proceeds on the 8th. So a whole bunch of restaurants get together, and including yours, sir, and mine.
80 restaurants around the city.
80 restaurants around the city. And then everybody's giving percentage of their proceeds from that night. And all this is to fight homelessness in Seattle. Because in case you haven't noticed, we have an issue.
I think the goal was, if I played golf
million.
With the... manager of Pearl Jam, and I believe he said it was $10 million.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
Well, between the two concerts and 80 restaurants giving 10% or 20% of their profit that night, it's going to tally up very quickly to a couple millions. And, you know, with the nice people we have living in Seattle who understand the issue and are aware and also capable of helping in that way, if everybody pitches in, we should be able to, as citizens, able to remedy to a serious amount of that issue.
All right. And, so if you don't get tickets to the show, which
correct.
I believe is sold out already,
is, yeah.
you can always go to one of these restaurants. There's 80 of them. It was spearheaded by Angela Stoll, co-owner of Ethan Stoll Restaurants and a board member at United Way. And she's going to be the new CEO at Fair Starts. So
doing great things for our city,
Katie,
Angela.
Can you look in here and just figure out where people go to find out which restaurant? Oh, here it is. Nope, that's not it either. So... I want to find out, Sarah, where people go a website to find out which restaurants, maybe their favorite restaurant is on the list, or maybe they could try a new restaurant.
That's
right. They should be, because both Luke and Lule are on it.
Yeah, I have a few in there. I know Lola is in there, Carlisle Room. So just check it out.
Yeah, again, this is a great reason to go out. If you love to eat out anyway, I have no doubt that there is a place on here that you would like to dine.
That's right. And the, that website that you can go to is pearljam.com/news/the-home-shows-restaurant-night. And that has a list of every restaurant in Seattle that is donating on August 8th.
So say it one more time.
pearljam.com/news/the-home-shows-restaurant-night. And we'll also put it on our Facebook page
okay,
so you can find it there.
All right. Good. That sounds like it's going to be a fun night. Looking forward to it.
Are you going to the show?
I'm not. I was invited, but...
What? And you said no?
You know, I'm a shy person. I don't do rock concerts at
stadiums.
Tom, they were not asking you to be on stage just to sit down and
well,
watch the show.
And I'm not going at all. Forget
that. I'd be
that.
Happy to go
Why
with
not
you.
On stage? Why I'll would
be,
I go?
I'll be your social butterfly. You can sit there. I'll bring you snacks. It'd be great.
I like that. I'm really shy. What? Not on stage? I'm not going.
Yeah. You know, I like those concerts where you pay a lot of money and you go sit in someone's backyard and you hear someone famous. And then all the money goes to charity.
I mean, I think you're talking about Brandi Carlile.
Or the Dixie Chicks or Neil Young.
Whatever. Moving on, Fancy Pants.
No,
Some of us plebeians have to go to
I told you, I tried to get tickets. I can't even get tickets. Yeah. I'm like, Jesus.
Anyway. Let's talk about... food writers.
Yes.
I was writing an article for Alaska Magazine, which I do every month. If you're ever flying Alaska, and you please take out the magazine
and you
want to
fall asleep.
And you want to fall asleep, yeah. And if you don't want to do the crossword puzzle, you actually want to read something, I write an article every month in Alaska Magazine. One of the many things that I enjoy doing. And this time I wrote about, remember last week, Loretta, my daughter, came on and asked us, how do you decide where to eat when you're traveling when you don't really have a connection? You don't really know, and you don't want to just depend on Yelp or TripAdvisor. You want some real insider information. And so I was, I decided that it was important enough, especially for an airline magazine, to kind of write about it and think about it. And so I did. And it... it all came back to me. What my process is I will use Yelp and I'll use TripAdvisor and kind of get a sense of what's out there. And then I started thinking, how do I distill from there? Then I'd call a chef if I know one. If I don't know one, then I look at Eater or something like that to help me distill even further. But then to me, it all kind of came back to the local food writer. It felt very old-fashioned, although I am looking at it online. Not flying in a newspaper. But it felt old-fashioned. But what I really liked about the idea is that kind of like a chef, that when you go to their restaurant, you kind of know their style and you know kind of where they're coming from, and that either meshes with you or it doesn't. I think a food writer can be the same.
Yes.
And so the ones that came to my mind, Jonathan Gold from the LA Times, who recently passed away, but just a terrific writer and really explored the food scene in LA like nobody else and didn't put anything above the lowest. Like a great taco was just as important to him as getting dinner at the Michelle Richard Citrus when it used to be there, or you know, it's just food was food on all levels, either good or it's not good.
Well, I agree with that kind of philosophy. I mean, as a chef, and I'm sure you do too, Tom. To me, I totally agree with that. There is no stars in between the taco, the best taco in the world, and the caviar and whatever.
It's either good or it's not good.
Exactly.
So I felt in kinship with him, the way he thought about food. So naturally, for me, when I read his articles, and he likes this place, that's where I'm going.
Right.
And so I was thinking about who's still alive in that way, and for me, it's the most prominent one is Pete Wells from the New York Times.
From the New York Times.
Now this guy,
what a great writer.
He has the power to eviscerate you to extinction with about three paragraphs.
Right.
Literally, you could put $5 million into a restaurant, you could have 20 partners of millionaires, and he'll put you out of business in three paragraphs.
Yeah.
But he chooses not to. It's very rare when he goes that route, and when he does, he knows they can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he trashed Guy Fieri's restaurant in Times Square, right? That's not going to hurt Guy Fieri.
No.
The other investors' money. When he trashed Per Se, Thomas Keller's restaurant, he had already written glowingly about it before, but it had slipped in his mind. Yeah. And so, but he knows that's not going to put Thomas Keller out of business. Right.
Well,
right?
He also knows that Thomas Keller is probably up to the challenge of meeting that
yes,
review.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know? And they were merciless, brutal kind of reviews. But he never does that to, like, say, you or I. If we were to go to New York and try and open, he would be much more thoughtful and constructive.
He would do what's called a review, not a critic.
But I love his other articles that he writes about Sunday dinner that he cooks at home, where he kind of utilizes some of the shops from around the area and great finds, food finds. Levine was that way for Serious Eats, too.
Right,
I just love his writing. So that's how I decide. And so I was curious... You know, do you guys have a favorite writer? How do you think when you're traveling in other cities?
You know, I hear exactly what you're saying. I think that sometimes when it comes to writing, there is context that has to be taken into account, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the expectation of the diner? And then writing for that. You know, right now, yes, I go to all the same places I think that you probably do, Tom, whether it's the New York Times and any of these major publications that have been around for a while that have some clout behind them. But another interesting source to me is now, as it is for everybody, the old internet. But one of the places where I'm seeing a lot of interesting food content is actually YouTube and shows that are produced by maybe unconventional magazines. Maybe it's Complex Magazine, or maybe it's something as staid as Bon Appetit. Mm-hmm. And they really start to tackle regional cuisine quite a bit. So that's another way, I think, if you're more comfortable in that spectrum, to go and use the internet, look at YouTube, follow some things that you would trust normally, and explore that way.
No, I think to me, the chef route is obviously the first route, for sure.
Your buddies in the business.
Yeah.
Or acquaintances.
And if I don't know anybody, let's say, if I call Cincinnati. I don't think I know many people in Cincinnati anymore. But, you know, I would call somebody from Chicago and I'd say, hey, do you know any restaurants in Cincinnati? Because I know they would. You know, and I would trust their recommendation or at least their guidance, you know, and I would start that way. So I think if you can, and I think you don't have to be best friend with the chef. I think chefs don't mind, you know, if they get a question like, you know, we're coming to the city, where do you think we should go eat, you know? Just pick a few restaurants that are pretty well quoted through the, and pick a spectrum, and then call those guys and say, hey, do you mind sharing, you know, 3-4 restaurants with you guys? We're coming to town for 5 days. And, you know, I think it's always a good route, but there are a couple writers, you know, like you said, Tom, the New York Times and LA Times. I mean, those guys are, they're on top of their game. And
they're on top of their game, but I also feel in sync with them.
Right, exactly.
I appreciate the, you know, the issues that they bring up.
And that's what I mean by the top of their game, is they're tackling more than just, oh, I was in this restaurant, oh, you know, I had the pork chop, it was delicious, whatever. They're going a lot deeper than that because they're getting out of that route and they're also going through every neighborhood.
So if you are out of town and you want to come to Seattle, just go to Providence Cicero at Seattle Times and just ask her or read her reviews or whatever. See if you're in sync.
Or just email us.
All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Up next, we're having a dinner party at Katie O's house, and it's going to be salmon. And I'm curious who we're going to invite.
Ooh.
On Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show.
Yes. I'm Terry Rocher, the chef in the hat.
I'm Tom Douglas, the chef owner of many of Seattle's fine restaurants, and I'm faced by Katie O.
That's right, and it is time to have a dinner party. And as we like to do at our dinner parties, we're going to take one ingredient and use it in every course of the meal, and something very near and dear to all of our hearts is salmon. So we are going to take salmon, and we're going to have one big salmon feast. How does it sound?
I love it.
Okay, and as we like to do, we're going to invite a special guest, and today it's going to be Mark Titus, director of The Breach and The Wild.
Correct, and if you ever want to get informed on the Pebble Mine debate, literally the fight of a lifetime for these salmon, but if you want to get informed, go to the internet and look up The Breach or The Wild, and Mark is the director. I am the one of the executive producers, and I did the release of The Wild up in the Kenai Peninsula, on the Kenai Peninsula with Mark back in August, And I got to say, it's near and dear to my heart. And seeing those wild fish and the thought of having a toxic golden copper mine in their breeding grounds just makes you want to puke. So Stop Pebble Mine is the nature of our conversation. And so Mark is going to love coming. Because what we say is,
I know what you say.
Eat wild to save wild.
That's right. Counterintuitive as it might be.
Yeah, because if you don't create an economy around this fish, a way for people in that area to make a living, to send their kids to school, to buy groceries, if you don't create some sort of economy around this fish, tourism, you know, fishing guides, whatever that happens to be, then they're going to choose something else that will help them do or achieve those lifetime goals.
That's
of
right.
Taking care of their family and college education, and that's golden copper because it's right there in the ground. So we have to give them a way to make a living without creating toxic gold and copper mine runoff ponds, tailing ponds of billions and billions of gallons, which, if they break, which they have been known to do, will wipe out the fishery.
Yeah. So. Very challenging to try to contain that for a lifetime.
So I'm going to start.
Years and years. Yes, please do.
Okay, Mark loves salmon, which is always surprising to me because he's been fishing it for 30 years. He's making movies about it, but every time I see him, he eats salmon.
Yeah, you think he'd want a steak every now and again.
I know, exactly.
Not so much.
So we're going to start by making a little juniper berry cured gravlax, right? And then we're just going to have, what is that? The
aquavit.
Aquavit. So I'm going to make a simple little aniseed and juniper gravlax with lots of salt and a little bit of sugar, right? And press it for a couple of days. And then we're going to slice it thin, and we're going to have little shots of aquavit to go with our gravlax.
Delicious. That sounds very, aquavit. Very good.
Aquavit is generally a caraway liqueur, although you can make it in different flavors.
Yeah, I know. It sounds delicious. I was totally there. I was going to do a little bit different, but that's cool. That's exactly what I would do for starter. I'm going to do an appetizer with a little cornet of smoked salmon. We're going to do a nice light overnight cure, and then we're going to slightly smoke. I'm not a big fan of heavy smoke and not hot smoke, cold smoke on my salmon. And then we're going to make little cornets with that and fill them up with a nice little goat cheese mixture, as in cream, goat cheese, chives, a little bit of garlic, salt and pepper. And then fill up the smoked salmon with that.
Delicious.
And serve that on crostinis, olive oil crostinis. That would be delicious with a little salad next to it and a glass of Sauvignon Blanc.
It's delightful. I feel like Mark is really excited to have your salmon dishes already.
King. The salmon is our king. We have to celebrate it.
Yes, and if we're going to celebrate it in a big way with the entree, how are we going to do that, Tom?
Well,
give us something impressive.
You know,
Tom's done salmon million ways.
I really have. I've done salmon so many ways. Of course, we have our salmon rub, which is now the best-selling salmon rub in the world. Who knew?
Good for you.
That is the suggestion right now. I'm going to take the whole fish that I caught myself in Puget Sound on the one day in the last 10 years when you were allowed to keep a blackmouth king salmon. I don't know when that day was, but that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
Anyway, so it's about 15 pounds. It's a beautiful fish. And I'm going to leave it whole, head on. And we're going to gut it. We're going to scale it because I don't want to eat those scales because I'm going to cook it with the skin on. But I'm going to gut it, and then I'm going to stuff the belly with slices of onion, slices of fennel, big fronds from the fennel bulb. Onions, sweet onions, salt and pepper, and then we're going to tie it up like you would a rib roast. Just make little twine ties all the way around it so that it holds in all that deliciousness in the belly.
Yeah, all those aromatics.
And then we're going to put it on a nice low fire. You don't want to go too hot or you'll burn the skin before you'll cook the inside of the fish. So I actually have a grill at my house that will take a 15-pound salmon.
That is a big grill.
In one direction. And I have to hurry because Sean's giving me the 2 minutes here. But anyway, so I'm going to cook that, and I'm going to make a little fennel butter from the pollen of the fennel flowers of the plant, and that's what we're going to slather on top. Once this is all roasted and the skin's brown, we're going to slather the fennel butter on top and drink it with a beautiful Oregon Pinot Noir.
Wow. I'm going to make a caramelized salmon, you know, which is basically cured heavy overnight again. And then I'm going to do a hot smoke this time with caramelization around it with a nice little brown sugar, a bit of honey, lots of spices, and a little bit of harissa to give it a little bite. Mm-hmm. And
we're on dessert now, right, Chef?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and okay. Once that's done, I'm going to make little strips of that and mix it with a nice little fig and arugula salad. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of Parmesan just on top, and just one little sliver of Parmesan, so you can have a nice little caramelized salmon with fig salad.
Hmm.
How's that?
Hmm.
We don't need dessert.
Know.
We don't need dessert.
There's people vomiting in the audience right now. But no,
maybe,
just kidding.
I thought maybe you were going to use like salmon berries.
That's because they're making more room for my dessert.
Katie O just had a great idea.
I'm sorry.
Salmon berries.
Here we
That's
go.
That's what I thought maybe you'd go and use. Salmon colored
I did
things.
Not go there. That's pretty cool.
That's
All
a good
right.
thought right there.
That's
right.
a pretty
Let's
cool.
See.
Thinking my ways around it.
Do you want salmon berries for dessert, or do you want smoked caramelized salmon?
I go with the salmon berry. Obviously.
I'm flattered.
I can always have more salmon.
No. And I love figs. And there's, of course, there's delicious figs around right this minute. Up next, our favorite taste of the week. Hang with us. We'll be right back on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen. It's Chef Tom Douglas.
Hey. And Terry Rotaro, the chef in the hat.
And Katie O.
Hopefully you lasted through that long break. You got something to eat or drink, or maybe a little Bloody Mary or a little mimosa.
Whatever you're feeling like.
Whatever you're feeling. Yeah. It's weekend
it's
drink
weekend.
Time.
Weekend. Have fun.
The bar's open. Go ahead.
How about the whole beer thing with some lemonade in it? That seems very popular in Spain right now.
Yeah.
Hasn't it always?
Chef did not
it's
approve of
no,
that.
No. It's limonade, not lemonade.
What does that mean?
It's not the same lemonade that we know here.
Uh-huh.
It's limonade, which is a sparkling sweet water.
Oh, well,
so that's what they add to the beer. What do they do it in French?
With
too?
Lemon flavor, right?
Yeah, a little bit of lemon flavor,
sounds
but not
refreshing.
As strong as lemonade.
It sounds like lemonade to me.
Yeah, it does sound a little bit like that.
All right, we'll go with you.
All right. Anyway, taste of the week. I was at the farm filming some of my evening magazine segments, which I do here at the Hot Stove generally. We took it on the road to the farm and picked some things that were in season. And our apricot tree is just finishing up.
I remember that tree.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to get 1,000 pounds of apricots off of one tree.
Do you have enough restaurants to take care of all those apricots?
I kind of do.
Just joking.
I'll just take 10 pounds, Tom. I'll buy 10 pounds from you. So
right.
I can make my jam. Those apricots are good.
Thank you.
I remember that.
I've already used them. anyway, so my taste of the week was taking, and this is a lesson for everyone, taking some of the fruit that, like, I just took the apricots that were overripe.
Right.
They literally were melting in my hand. When I picked a peach off our peach tree, it melted in my hand. It was literally a ball of sugar syrup.
This is when it's
100 degrees.
And where you were just like,
it was hot. I just shoved it in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It was unbelievable. I had to go shower afterwards. I was so sticky. Anyway, I took the overripe apricots, and I took the jalapenos are crazed right now. They grow in this heat like nobody's business.
Yeah.
And so they're absolutely crazed. So I took half dozen jalapenos, and I took 24 apricots, and I didn't peel either one. I just took the stem off the jalapeno seeds, everything.
Ooh.
Pulled the pit out of the jalapeno skin on. I mean, off the apricot skin on.
Oh, I like
put them
the
all in
this.
A Vitamix blender with lime juice and salt.
Nice cocktail.
So
oh my goodness! No, it's not a cocktail.
Well,
I made a sauce for a chicken skewer.
I was going to put vodka
apricot
in it.
Hot sauce. Yeah, I did chicken skewers with it for the show. So good.
I bet
just
that
saying.
Was so good. So then you.
But the point is,
glazed?
Use that overripe fruit. I mean, I could barely get it. The apricot opened it. It just tore and melted. There, and so use that stuff.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. Good taste of the week. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you can always go to your farmer's market and see what kind of seconds that they have there that kind of speak to what you're saying, right? Tomatoes that are a little overripe, apricots that are a little overripe, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and as they work their table all day long, they'll pull that stuff off because they don't want that to be the show.
Right.
They want you to show you the perfect ones. But they'll have the overripe ones down below and just ask.
It's my fave.
Just like the burnt ends at the Chinese barbecue window. Oof. Just ask.
Just ask that guy with the beard.
Yep.
Cutting away. My taste of the week, it has been too hot in my little apartment to cook, but I love the Matisse sardines. Have you had that product off the shelf?
Yes. Those are delicious.
Yeah, they're Spanish sardines and packed in oil. They have a couple of different flavors. You can get ones that have a little bit of lemon or piquillo pepper, but I like just having the straight oil-cured sardines around in the house, and you can do a lot. You can make like a little Niçoise salad if you've got kind of some salad fixings on hand, but if you really don't want to cook, I made a nice little, almost like French-style baguette sandwich with a little bit of dill, a little bit of mustard, these sardines, cracked black pepper. It's great.
Are these the ones in the plastic container, or are these the ones in the can?
No, the tin.
Okay, the tin.
Tin can, yeah. So I'm a big fan. They don't sell them everywhere, but I'm sure you can get them online, M-A-T-I-Z, and some specialty stores as well. That was my taste.
And anchovies are delicious, too.
Yes.
Taste of the week. I went to a concert at Chateau Saint-Michel and made a wonderful little pasta. Actually, my wife and I both together made a wonderful little pasta salad with canned tuna, tomato, arugula, and walnut, toasted walnut. And my wife was the one with the toasted walnut. I was like, pasta salad and toasted walnut? She goes, oh, yeah, I had that when I was a child. And we had that, and that was absolutely scrumptious. We scoffed the whole thing down with a bottle of rosé. Go figure.
I hope you ate it fairly soon after you got to the concert.
We had a nice chest, Tom. We were not traveling with the pasta salad on the armpits. We actually had a nice chest.
Actually, I'm a little surprised they let you in with a nice chest. You're allowed to bring your own meal, huh?
We had a nice chest that was like as big as my fridge at home. The guy was like, oh my God, where are you going with this? I'm like, well, we're going to eat. We're here for 5 hours, so we're going to eat a lot.
That's 5 hours. Let's see. That's three meals.
Yeah, at maybe, least a couple maybe of those with multiple courses, I would
at
think.
Your,
right?
At your speed, yes. Anyway.
Who did you see? What serenaded you through your
blues,
tuna pasta salad?
Blues concert with Taj Mahal and Keb Mo. And there was also the Dirty Dozen Brass Band from New Orleans. It was fun. It was, it was very... There was one time where I was taking a nap, and then after that I was dancing, and, you know, it was really fun.
Was it hot?
It was hotter than hot. It was somewhere up in the low 90s. In full sun, thank God we brought an umbrella and duct taped it to the cooler. like good
MacGyver. Well,
good people.
I see, this is why I don't go to concerts. Doesn't that block other people's views?
No. During the concert, we put it down.
Oh,
but,
okay.
You know, there is intermission, an hour intermission.
Fine.
So
feel better about
Wait,
it.
Wait, you don't go
Did
to concerts?
Did you share any of your bounty with your neighbors? Were they happy to be sitting next to one of Seattle's most celebrated chefs?
No. We don't tell them that. We don't tell
them. Didn't you wear your chapeau? You're very recognizable.
Yes, but, you know, I kind of hide under the umbrella. I mean, you know. I'm not going there to be like, hey, how's everybody? I'm going there to go, I just want to chill.
Huh. And be with my lovely wife, Kathy.
Exactly.
And eat our bounty of food from our freezer, etc.
How did the rosé go with the tuna?
The rosé was delicious. It was a rosé Syrah from Chateau Saint-Michel, which we bought in the winery.
Oddly enough, it was at their winery, right?
Yeah. Oddly enough, you don't bring your own wine to a winery, right? And no, it was fantastic. We actually had a nice time, brought some ice cube, put that in there. Mr. Chateau Saint-Michel, we put some ice cube in your rosé.
All right.
It was delicious.
We have the rest of our second hour coming up here. We have Cooking with Electricity. We're going to talk to Chef Brittany Bartleben in the Baker's Corner. And also Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. So don't go away on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Time to cook with electricity on the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotero, the chef in a hat.
And I'm Katie O.
Terry Rotero is a fabulous audience motivator.
He really is.
Everyone was taking a nap, and he just made them clap.
He's our hype man. Yeah.
If you want tickets to the show, just go to hotstovesociety.com. They're a total of $15, which is normally what you'd spend on a cup of coffee at Starbucks. But here, you also get the coffee and a Dahlia Bakery breakfast sandwich.
And it's well worth over that.
So good.
So good, so good.
So delicious.
Sarah Leibovitz, our production assistant, is here. And You have a new apartment, is my understanding.
I do, yes. I just moved in a couple days ago.
And what makes this place special? Why are we doing this entire segment on you?
Because I wrote this segment.
Fair enough.
But this is my first time being in an apartment with an electric stove and oven. Mm-hmm. And I am feeling a little unsure of it. I grew up with a gas oven. I understand them. You know, you can see the flames. You know how hot things are. Electric ovens kind of freak me out a little bit, just because you can't tell really when like something is hot, how hot it is. You just kind of have to trust it in a way you don't with a gas oven.
No, well, never trust the enemy. That's for sure.
So they both have thermostats, right? The electric oven has a thermostat that tells you that it's 400 degrees or 350, and the gas oven does too, right?
Yeah, that's true. I guess it's more the stovetop where you can't see the flames in the same way that you can with a gas stovetop.
But you can see the red coil. I find that dynamic.
Enjoy it.
Is it an induction top or coil top?
I believe it's a coil top.
So you can see the red coil.
Yes.
When you turn it on, it gets molten red.
Yeah, I've only used it once so far, and it did not get molten red.
Wait, you've been in your house for 4 days, and you have used your stove once?
I've been in my house for 2 days.
Oh, plus it's 90 degrees, so there's no reason to use it. Yeah.
You made popcorn.
I made popcorn.
On the stovetop.
Yes.
Well, that's
how did that go?
Mm-hmm. Fine. Yeah.
Was
Fine.
It too hot, too cold? Was it? Were you able to manage that?
It made the popcorn, so it went well. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to get into what kind of popcorn it was. It wasn't like Jiffy Pop or something like that.
No, it was just regular kernels.
I'm feeling Sarah on this topic because since I've been a renter, which is pretty much now all of my life, it feels like, it is so difficult to find an apartment that has a gas range. And it's something that I always lust after when I look at people's homes. I'm like, I really wish I had one of those. But no, I have an electric burner. And they are a little bit tricky, and I think each of them are a little different depending on which kind you have.
True, and each of the burners typically on top have a different power level, right? They're different
100%.
Sizes. Do you have four different sizes or like a couple different sizes?
Yes, definitely a couple different sizes.
And there's four burners.
Yes, there are.
That's good
nice.
Size.
Yeah.
Katie, what's the first piece of advice you would give
me? I would say that it's going to take some experimenting with a lot of different types of foods. And you're becoming quite the cook now, right? You're doing a lot of cooking.
I just saw your galette. It was beautiful.
Beautiful free-form pie. I think you must have been inspired by our show last week. But I think that you're going to have to see which, as Tom is saying, which of your burners does what and at what rate it heats up. Mm-hmm. So I would not say create a long dinner party without figuring out how they behave, honestly. I know with mine, I have not the coil type of burner that you've got, but rather the induction kind of glass-plated one. And what I do notice with mine, and I think electric might be the same way, where because it's not gas and it doesn't emit that kind of consistent heat, it will turn on, it will turn off, it will turn on, it will turn off.
Yeah, because it can only get so hot, and then it's a safety thing that they have in it,
that it doesn't just blow up.
Well, luckily hers works differently, because that's nonsense.
Oh, that's not how coils work.
Well, that shouldn't be how your stovetop works either.
Oh, it definitely
depends.
Does.
Sometimes on induction, it depends on what percentage of your pan is connected to the magnetic induction issue. So you might be either have the wrong kind of pan or you might not be slid over onto the right spot. But for in your case, since we're talking about you, it's not all about Katie.
It's not all about
we're talking
me.
About Dreamboat about Annie over here.
Yes.
Thank you.
So the first thing I would do is get a pan of water and boil it and get a feel for it. Turn it on low and see where the boiling water goes. Turn it on medium and see where you're at. Turn it on high and see if it overflows, right? So you get some sort of sense of where medium is and where low is. Secondly, on an electric burner, unlike gas where you can just make, you turn it and you get the gas up and down, well, you don't feel comfortable with that yet, right? So you're going to work the edges of your burner. Just pull your pot a little bit off the edge if it gets too hot rather than you can't stop it, right? Oh, my God, you're freaking out because things are boiling and you can't stop it. Just move your pot off the burner a little bit. Whereas gas, you can just turn it off, all right? So you can't do that with electric. It takes time to cool off. So you're going to work the edge of the coil a little bit with your pan, but get a feel for it with boiling water. It's a pretty simple way to understand what burners work, how they work, how hot they get, how fast.
I would also say about electric stovetops, why I sometimes crave that gas burner that you're used to, Sarah, is because I don't feel like they get as hot as some stove ranges do in terms of BTUs and that sort of thing. So, for example, if you're wanting to cook a really delicious steak at home and you want a really, really hard sear, I think electric ranges have a hard time doing that. So my little trick is your oven will get hotter than your stove range will. So if you have a nice
cast iron, broiler in your oven.
The broiler will. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But even like if you have an oven that will go to 500 and you heat your cast iron pan up to 500, that pan will hold that heat longer than your electric burner is even able to get it up. So that would be also my tip for
you. Boy, if you're stuck in that scenario, I would move. That sounds like too much
work. It sounds like I have to move. Yeah. I think I'm getting life tips
from
Tom
now. Well, I'm just
saying,
that sounds like a lot of work.
It is, but sometimes you need a steak.
Just making a darn steak.
Sometimes you really want a steak at home.
Terry, do you have a gas or electric?
Gas.
Okay.
I have a 1962 Roper stove, very American, old made, and you know, some of the things barely work on it, but most of the things work. And what I like the most about it is it's a very wide range. It's a 48 inch range, and it provides enough room for big, large pan to be on the burner. Yeah. My philosophy about heat is, you know, most people, they're just too impatient. You know, when I put a pan on my fire, I walk away. You know, you start slicing your mushroom after you put the pan on the stove. Mm-hmm. You know, turn the heat up, start slicing your mushroom. By the time you're done slicing your mushroom, your pan will be hot enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you do the
and
other way...
And if it's on fire, then you know really it's hot enough.
too hot. I would also say if you're really missing gas, I always like to have one of those little butane burner gas stoves.
As an extra burner,
partially just because I like doing like shabu shabu or kind of a nabe pot or something like that, but also useful if you're really missing that high heat sear.
It's funny. I don't think you're going to have as many problems as Katie does with her glass top because I've had electric burners and they get just as hot. And the thing is, you can't control them as fast as you control gas. So you just have to be a little bit more aware of your surroundings. Right, because you don't want a jet flame coming off of your burner and burning up your little hood system. And
yeah, for me, my experience...
That would be preferable, true.
Yeah, my experience with electric burner is definitely gets really, really hot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can definitely get some serious heat out of that. But, like Tom said, regulating it is a little bit harder. So
you agree that KDO needs to move to a new apartment
for
a better
stove?
Yeah,
Katie, we need to look into that. This is, all right, this is a serious issue.
Take care of the rest of the show. I got to go look on Redfin for a bit now.
Albert Lee appliances.
Well, you only live once, Katie. If you're going to sit around with a terrible stove.
Oh, my gosh. You're right, Tom. YOLO. YOLO.
YOLO.
YOLO.
YOLO.
Okay.
Up next, it's the Baker's Corner with Chef Brittany Bartle-Laban from the Dahlia Pastry Kitchen. What is a creme supposed to a cream? We're going to answer that question on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Baker's Corner on the Seattle Kitchen Show. Chef Brittany Bartle-Laban has tromped across the street.
Yes.
Just 1 foot in front of the other from the bakery. We are located right across the street from the Dahlia Bakery here above Lola Restaurant in the Andra Hotel. Where the Hot Stove Society is, and you get to just walk across and come do your segment every week.
Yep.
And we love that you show up. That's always nice.
I love dropping by.
All right, let's talk about cremes and creams.
Yes, let's.
Because that is what's on the docket today.
Yeah, I feel like it's just one of the most amazing blank canvas desserts, creme brulee or creme caramel, because you can... Cream is a great vehicle for infusions, and you can, I mean, your imagination.
Yeah, cream will absorb just about any flavor.
And yeah, just about any flavor. Spices,
even the fridge
herbs,
flavor,
even
if you
the
don't
fridge,
cover
unfortunately.
It.
So, really, it's just your wildest dreams, whatever you want to do. You can also drop a little fruit in the little cups before you bake the creme and have a nice little fruity surprise in there.
Can I start with something on this?
Please do.
Yeah, and this is just mainly for you, Brittany, Miss Fancy Pastry Chef.
Uh-oh. He's been like this all day.
I just want you to know that when we were reviewed by the New York Times, they called our creme caramel that I used to make. Mm-hmm.
That I now make.
That you now make. But I started it.
Yes, it's Tom's famous creme caramel.
Possibly...
The best one in the world.
The best creme caramel in the world.
Tom, for many years, had it on the menu as Tom's creme caramel, best one in the world.
And, I'm glad you brought
just
that
saying,
up.
Just saying, I didn't want to bring that up.
No, I wanted to talk about
it. Makes
that
people,
creme
like, especially fancy bakers, it makes people uncomfortable about the prowess of creme caramel that I have. And so I just wanted you to be comfortable in this space.
I have to say that.
Because we're all about comfortable space.
Yeah, I'm feeling comfortable enough to tell you that I love that,
that creme. It is incredible.
It's a little bit more substantial in some ways than
would
like
you like to know why?
Yes, I would. It's a great texture.
Yeah, why don't you tell us how
typical
you make it?
Typical creme caramels or flans have milk in them. And so they're a little eggier, they're a little lighter.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Not this one.
No, this one
is all cream, and that's actually what I love about it. It is sturdy.
It's
to me a creme, especially a creme caramel, I like it to be firm and, like you said, sturdy. That's the perfect word for it. And it just holds up. It's tall and it sits on that plate.
It's
so proud of itself.
Yes.
That's
a lot of egg yolks.
Yeah. It is not a healthy dessert, but.
Yes, it is.
It depends
eggs
on. I mean, if you're on the keto diet, it's fine. But
I was going to say, like, how often is any. Like, if you're already going down the path after being out for dinner and you're going to get
crab
dessert.
Cakes and, it's not a huge portion either. We're looking at 4 ounces.
Right.
And, I mean, I would love to look at the coconut cream pie and the creme caramel side by side nutritionally.
I bet you the creme caramel would be better.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
I would totally agree with the New York Times and yourself that it is it is the best creme caramel I've ever tasted. I really enjoy making
it. The big key is you can't overcook it, right? You got to cook it at that low temperature or curdles.
Yeah. So let's talk about the perfect creme. First of all, I think if you're going to make a creme caramel or a creme brulee, you should just do it in individual cups. A lot of people will make a large version of it, but it just takes forever in the oven. And then if you're doing a creme brulee, burning that sugar on top is going to take forever. And by the time you do that, the heat from your torch or your oven has turned your beautifully baked custard to soup. So invest in maybe 4 to 6 ramekins.
Mm-hmm.
I think often people will get those 8-ounce ramekins. If you can just maybe splurge and get a size smaller, invest in, 6 to 4 ounce size
and
ramekins. I think that's better.
When you say invest, is that because it's not quite as normal of a size, and so you?
No, yes, that no. It's well, it's just like it's one of those containers that has maybe a couple of jobs in the kitchen, and
right.
I'm not always a fan of tools or dishes that only have one job.
Use, yeah.
So, but they also make great little salt dishes or something.
Yeah, cracker pepper.
Exactly.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. So. And they're pretty inexpensive, and you can get some really cute little ones, too. But basically, it just takes less time to bake, and so it's less of an investment in your time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the product just, I think, turns out better. You're always going to bake it in a water bath,
mm-hmm.
and always in a low oven.
That's important.
Very important.
And when we're talking low, how low are we going?
We're talking 275 degrees.
Yeah, it's quite low.
Quite low.
And the one of the reasons for that is that your water bath rarely comes up to the height
of the creme,
right? Mm-hmm. And so you want to make sure that the top of the custard doesn't break or get crusty. So you just want to stay low. And
which has happened to me before, mm-hmm. and it's not pleasant. You just have to throw it out.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it ever comes too hot, it's going to separate.
Yeah.
So it's going to curdle, basically. That's what it's doing. So
it's so unpleasant.
Then you wasted your whole time. So in the creme caramel situation, it's probably one of the most important parts to make sure your oven is not too hot.
Yes. Yeah, creme caramel, it's just one of those desserts that's actually fairly easy to do, but there's some rules you really have to follow. I would say start with hot water in your water bath. Some people will just pull, room temperature water or water from the tap. That's not a good idea. I'm not saying do boiling water, but maybe get the kettle out and get, if your tap water doesn't go very hot.
Tea temperature.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And do it in the oven.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
So many people try to put their pan with the cups of custard and then they put the water in on top of the stove.
No.
And then they try and lift it to the oven. And you should really just put the whole pan in the oven and then pour your teapot of water into the
That's
pan.
A very good point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Any tricks for keeping the ramekins from sliding around?
Yeah,
I'll
just put a little tea towel in the bottom of my roasting pan and it kind of keeps them from sliding around. In the pastry kitchen,
That's a good trick.
Yeah. In the pastry kitchen, we cook like 15 of them at a time, so they're all so tightly.
No problem.
When I was a scientist, it was newspaper. You put newspaper every time you bake something in the oven that needs to not go any high heat. So what you want to avoid is you put newspaper, one sheet of newspaper on the bottom, and it avoids the bubble also to come up and just splatter into your flan.
It's just enough.
Well,
traction.
If you still get the paper, that's a good one.
Yeah, if you are periodic.
Just put your yes, I do. Thank you very much.
Just put your iPad in there.
Totally.
I think that was a shot at old people, right?
I know. I just suddenly felt really stupid.
Just in time for your birthday.
No, it's romantic.
What's going on here?
Okay,
so let's go back to where you were at the beginning, like flavoring this cream now.
Yeah.
I always use vanilla bean in my world famous.
Absolutely.
Yes,
in the world famous.
So now let's just say we want to make something a little different. So
spices. Let's start with some spices. Okay. That's probably the most simple, you know, cinnamon creme brulee or, you know, a blend of spices.
Like a chai tea.
Tea is a fantastic one.
That would be like cardamom and maybe a little
cardamom,
orange.
Maybe star anise. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Reduce syrup and juices are good to mix.
Yeah. Yeah. We've done a blood orange compound where we reduce the blood orange juice by quite a bit.
Passion fruit.
It's a syrup.
Like
make a blood orange.
So is that better than, say, taking the cream and steeping it with the blood orange peels?
Well,
and
I do both.
Straining it?
I do both when I do
it.
Yeah, so another zest of any citrus fruit in a creme is absolutely delicious. A Meyer lemon creme caramel. Taking the sugar that would normally be in your custard and cooking that on the stove until it's caramelized and then adding your cream. And then adding maybe a little whiskey, maybe a little molasses. There you've got a butterscotch creme.
Yeah.
Chocolate cremes, just add a little melted chocolate to your base. I mean,
alcohol is good.
Alcohol is always
base.
Good. Yes.
Grand Marnier.
So aren't you worried about it being too watery by adding the alcohol, or will it evaporate
out? It'll evaporate out, and you don't need to add a lot of it. Yeah.
Very flavorful rum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dark rum will flavor your creme really well.
What about things like fruit purees? Is it too watery?
As long as you're doing, you don't add too much of it. And I feel like passion fruit, like you'd mentioned earlier, is such a strong flavor that you really only need to add a little bit of it.
It's more juice than a puree.
Yeah. You might swap out some of the puree for the cream. So maybe add a half cup of passion fruit puree and then remove a half cup of the cream that would have been in your base.
Yeah, and that will re-intensify.
Yeah. And as I've mentioned before, one of my favorite things is to drop a couple of huckleberries or something into the cup and then bake the creme, and you've just got these beautiful little swirls of
and don't forget one of Seattle's favorite, just take some ground espresso in your cream, let it steam.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Now, the other thing I like with creme caramel of that nature is a crispy cookie on the side.
Always.
Yeah. It's so custardy.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, you stole her idea.
I was just going to bring this up because unlike the creme brulee, which has a built-in crispy top, the creme caramel does not.
You need a little cookie for dipping. Mm. Yeah, I like a shortbread. Right now at the Dahlia Lounge, we're doing a little just lemon tuile. Just pumped right on top.
Long de shell, too.
For years, we did a Rice Krispie treat on
that. Yes, we did. Yes.
But it was like the thinnest little wispiest Rice Krispie treat, which was really, really a next level Rice Krispie treat. Almost calling it a Rice Krispie treat doesn't quite
It's not. No, it is not a Rice Krispie treat. It is caramelized Rice Krispies, like a Rice Krispie brittle.
In one single thin layer and really, really like, again, wispy and snappy. It was really good.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, everything you could want in a creme brulee. I think the next one I want to try. I mean, the vanilla bean is hard to resist, but
it's a classic.
But I think the chai tea one sounds pretty good too.
Super good. I will say I've tried to mess with doing different flavors of creme caramel at the Dahlia Lounge and the diners. We're like, nope. You bring back that classic.
We
world
like
famous.
What Tom in the New York Times.
Getting
likes.
Too crazy there.
That's right.
Up next, we have Food for Thought, tasty trivia on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. For Thought Tasty Trivia with the Hot Stove Society on the Seattle Kitchen Show. I am Chef Tom Douglas.
I'm Katie O.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And normally I would administer the quiz, but you know what? I'm playing. I'm playing today.
You're
fresh. Ooh, and she's feisty.
That's right. Tina Knoll, our producer, is on the mic right now, and she's going to take us through the rules.
All right, you guys.
All ears.
Tom
in case you didn't know,
reference.
Tina, our producer, used to be on Radio Disney. We just had that little chat in the office. In the break.
Yeah, when you come to the audience, you get these secrets. When you come and buy your ticket to join us at the Hot Stove Society, you get the backstage info on the show.
And if you ask, we do have financing for the $15 ticket. $1 a month for the rest of your life.
All right, you guys, here's how this game is played. Each of you gets 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner. Whoever gets the least correct has to give something away to somebody that listens to our show. Today you'll be playing for Janae, who happens to be in our audience today. And the reason we're playing for lovely Janae is because we had a nice talk about dogs earlier, and I like her. So,
wow.
That's the other thing
I
you
love
get.
Love hot dogs.
Hot dogs?
Hot dogs, hot tips. Hot dogs, dogs. Just talk about dogs.
Where to? Do give us the address.
How do you feel about Costco getting rid of the Polish? That's what I want to know.
Wait, are they really getting rid of the Polish dog?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do we not cover that
tragedy
in the show? Okay, moving on.
All right, so Katie, if you lose, and I can't imagine you will, but if you do, what would you give to Janae over here?
Do you say that because you're looking at Terry and I and thinking that we're imbeciles, or do you say that because she is super smart?
She's super smart.
Oh, both, okay. Tom.
It's the glasses. They really fool the audience. Janae, I am moonlighting at Molly Moon's Homemade Ice Cream. We've got a bunch of shops all around Seattle and in Redmond, and it's our 10th anniversary. So how about a little gift pack, a $50 gift pack of goodies, sprinkles, hot fudge? Nice. Maybe a cute little shirt.
Why are you hating on Janae? Last week he gave $75. What about Janae don't you like?
You can never win, can you?
I can't. Well, it's because Rachel Bell lost last week, and so I'm paying off her debt a little bit.
I'm going to give a brunch for two at Luke on a Saturday or Sunday.
Nice. Brunch for two. Wonderful. Mm. Chef Tom, you know, Douglas.
You're going to bring somebody, right?
Of course.
Me, Janae. I mean, come on, we're friends now.
I'm going to give since we're heading into August, or we're in August now, I'm going to give any class in August at the Hot Stove Society, including our
Julia
Child birthday walk around. It's not a class so much.
Janae,
it's a walk around.
Is hoping you can lose.
You can pick whatever you'd like for two.
Oh,
but it has to be in August.
I think Tim Toms feels very confident he's going to win today.
Janae, if I were you, I'd get on your phone, I'd start Googling the answers to the things, and help Terry and I win this quiz. Just a hot tip for you. All right,
which one of you?
And mine's worth more than $50.
There you go.
Who'd like to go first?
I'll start. Go ahead.
Chef Terry, your first question. Is the edible sea cucumber a plant or an animal?
An animal.
Correct. One for Chef Rotaro. All right, true or false? Eating some raw fruits or vegetables after ingesting garlic can help alleviate garlic breath.
That is one of those weird questions to, let me see. Fruit or vegetable after garlic? Yeah, that makes kind of sense. Yeah, I would go for yes.
Correct. Yes is the answer. All right, question number 3. What kind of oven is traditionally used for baking naan?
A tandoori oven.
That is 3 for 3, Chef Terry. Killing it today. Chef, by U.S. law, butter must be at least what percentage of fat?
I don't know, but it's going to be wrong anyway.
80 or 90?
I'm going to go with 90.
Ooh, the answer's 80. Close, though.
See, I told you it was going to be wrong.
So, no. All right, your last question. Which dessert is topped with a thick biscuit crust, a cobbler, or a crisp?
A cobbler.
Correct. That's 4 out of 5. A valiant showing. Chef,
ooh, yeah. Nice job, Chefy. Wow. Nice job.
All right. Ah. I'm shaking in my Birkenstocks.
That is so Seattle.
It is, really.
You,
although
hippie,
I don't
you
have any socks.
That is even more Seattle.
Yeah, good choice, Katie. Good choice. That's a fashion wonder right there. Miss Katie, which two animals are usually used in truffle hunting?
Pigs and dogs.
Pigs and dogs, correct.
Those cuties.
Which substance is the least acidic, lemon juice, milk, or yogurt?
Milk.
Yeah.
Not so basic, that drink.
Duh, Ralph. Okay. What is a picnic ham? A cut from the foreleg of a pig or a southern pork recipe using Coca-Cola?
It's the first one.
Yep, sure is. Katie, 3 for 3. Katie, what are cubanelle, sweet banana, and bull's horn?
Peppers? Is that right?
Yeah. Types of peppers. 4 for 4.
What?
Oh. One more to beat Chef Thierry. The name of which common and edible weed comes from the French phrase dandelion, which means lion's tooth.
Marijuana.
Dandelion? What are you saying?
Dandelion is correct. Oh, five.
It's like the easiest question in
history.
Wait.
Say that again? What? That doesn't make it...
Is it because I made it sound so much like dandelion?
I was going to say, it's like... how would you have said that word?
I don't know. Show me the card. Dandelion? I want to read this. Because that didn't make any sense in the end. Five out of
one
five.
One word sounds like dandelion. Oh, dandelion does. Yeah. Can't figure it out.
I know.
Women helping women, you know?
I'm pretty sure that was not exactly how that should have been asked.
All right. Chef Tom Douglas, four is the
number. How many people eat dandelions every year? 18 million?
Oh, don't be sour. You've got a whole quiz coming up here. Focus on your game.
Chef Tom Douglas, four is the number to beat for you. Your first question, what are green shrimp? Are they extra small shrimp, eco-friendly shrimp, or raw unshelled shrimp?
Eco-friendly.
Nope, they're raw and unshelled. Sorry. Jeez.
I bet they're eco-friendly, too.
I mean, that was just...
Sure, they're fine.
Question number two. What dessert, which translates from French to English as perfect, is a layer...
Parfait.
Yep.
It's a little bit like dandelion.
I was going to say, is it because she said it?
Except
with an American accent?
She didn't say parfait.
Chef Tom Douglas, true or false, the Hawaiian specialty called poi is often allowed to ferment for several days until it becomes sour. That is definitely true. How many cups are in a quart?
Four.
Wow. All day long with this guy. All day long. Tom, what is the Spanish version of the French creme de caramel?
Flan.
Correct. Wow. That
That's
was
four out of five.
Four out of five. We need a tiebreaker.
Here you go.
A lot on the line for Janae here.
All righty, here we go.
The
tiebreaker. Katie, you're looking to see who gets this, right? What is the culinary term for the white head of a cauliflower?
Tom. Flower.
Nope.
Fleurette.
Nope.
In French it is.
Curd.
Why, we didn't say what language.
I wasn't playing, but
curd.
I got it right. Mm-hmm.
Katie got it right.
Well, that
curd.
Means Tom got it wrong first, so that means he's extra wrong.
All right, you win. Ooh. Any class you like in August, 4-2. At the Hot Stove Society, congratulations. Hope you have fun. If you want to be part of the show, go to hotstovesociety.com. If you would like to be part of the show, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by We're All Ears, Tina Knoll, and Large Media. Our associate producer is Sarah Leibovitz, and our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. If you'd like to come... be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. It does include breakfast. Also, remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.